available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. And we are actually in the very same room, David.
We are staring at each other right now. Eye contact. It's beautiful.
It's great. I can see your glorious beard.
It's big and powerful, right?
Can I say it's untamed? Is that fair?
Extremely untamed. it is a hardcore COVID beard and significantly grayer and whiter than last time you saw me.
There's a little gray.
Oh, it's not a little. I would say in the lower half of the beard, it is about half and half.
That's all right, though. Chicks like the gray, you know?
No.
I've been told, like, don't color your hair. Like, I got gray on the sides and stuff. They're like, nah, don't. They like it.
Well, nobody likes that much pepper. It's salt. It's just a lot more salt.
Half
pepper.
Nice. Well, it's really great to be with your salt and pepper beard right in the same room. We're going to, you know, maybe have a beverage or two afterwards. This is great.
Maybe.
I failed not having it in the office.
I failed freeloading and not bringing any of my own.
Right. Well, you bring so much more to the podcast. You don't need to bring beer, too.
You know? I mean, it's all the planning, the weeks of planning, the storyboarding. It's amazing that I draw pictures for this podcast to prepare us, but I feel like you do best with visual aids.
Yes.
I'm not the best
reader.
Yeah, no, look, let's call it what it is. Years of prep.
Yes.
Every moment of my life has been spent preparing for this moment right here.
Well, I'm very happy to be back in the same room with you, and it's great. If you guys want to get a hold of us, we're going to keep running these shows. The season's going to be here before you know it. We got Pac-12 Media Day coming up in like a month. That should be fun.
Oh, and you've got an email into me that I haven't responded to.
Yes, I asked if you want to like cover Pac-12 Media Day together, and what did you say in response to that email? Or you did not?
Do you have a crickets noise?
I don't have one. I need one on my... that's something we should do, I think. You know?
I think so. Yeah, we should have a booth.
I would love to have a booth. I've tried to do that in the past. I will try it again, and we'll see if we can get one. We could interview everyone. You know, maybe we'll remember most of the coaches' names. I don't know. But
hard to know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of turnover every year.
We could talk to them about beer or Disney princesses and stuff. They'll be really curious.
It would be great to ask each coach who their favorite Disney princess is.
I think
so. Get very meta with it.
Are there any Pac-12 coaches that don't have kids?
What a trivia question.
Chip Kelly was a recent... He
has no kids.
He got married recently, though.
Yeah, and he had a previous marriage, but I don't think it resulted in children.
Okay. So I think most of the coaches have children, so they'll probably be familiar with the Disney princesses.
But most coaches are psychopaths and probably have never spent any time with their children.
Fair. I was at a friend, you know, a sister of a friend's house, and their kids, they have like a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And they're hooked on the Moana soundtrack, which I still haven't seen the movie yet. Do you like that movie? Or is it good?
It's really good.
Hearing the Rock,
it's like a top 3 Disney movie all time.
Wow. Okay. So hearing the Rock sing, like, it was so like, you're welcome. Like, oh, he seems like a real nice fellow in this movie. Whatever. He's a demigod or something.
Yeah.
Maui. Yes. They love that song. They were dancing to the song. And
the best one is the crab. Sings basically it's like a lost David Bowie album. Like the song is amazing.
Oh,
Tamatoa.
Yeah, okay,
listen to the Tamatoa song.
Okay,
it's like legitimately just good. Like you don't even have to watch the movie. It's just a legitimately good song.
Nice. Well, I'll check out the movie because if you say it's a great movie, I want to see it.
It's fantastic.
I still have Disney Plus that I never use once the Mandalorian's over, so I need to do that.
Yeah, get into it. You should watch. So, like Disney movies, I would recommend. Like, just they're good. You got to go. Moana.
Okay.
You got to get after Mulan. Mulan's really good too, for like similar reasons.
Okay.
Well, so Ryan just motioned me to sit closer to the mic.
Get closer to the mic. You can move the mic a little closer to you, but you're getting like a little further away. So,
well, I like to be demonstrative when I'm recording the podcast.
Yeah. Nice. All right. That's your Disney princess moment here on the Podcast of Champions. It would be a show without that. If you want to email us and talk about something else besides Disney princesses, give us some topics. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com, or you could call or text us. We do have a voicemail this week from our buddy Perk. 424-532-0678 is the number. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. David did solicit. He got out. He actually got on Twitter, folks, and he solicited questions. So we'll get some of those. The website where you can find all the old episodes is Pac-12podcast.com. And over on the Reddit, I'm not going to lie, I haven't looked at this lately. Hopefully people are discussing all things Pac-12 football there. Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. And more importantly, and we'll see if David's checked this, Apple Podcasts. If you got that app on your iPad, your iPhone, wherever it is, follow us on the Podcast of Champions. Rate us 5 stars. That would be great. If you can say whatever you want about the show, crush us in the comments. But if you leave us 5 stars, we will certainly read it here on the podcast.
Nobody has left us a review in the last 12 days.
I'm very sad. Sad face. Sad emoji.
That's a, I'll just call it what it is. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, we produce this for you, the listener. And when you don't produce for us the 5-star reviews that we covet and I would say rejoice in, it makes us upset.
It's sad. Hurtful.
Yeah. No, it's an action you are taking against us that I would categorize under the term violence. And violence will be met with reprisals.
You don't want POC reprisals, folks.
Do you want an hour of Disney princesses that you're obligated to listen to? Because that's coming.
Yeah. So please get on there on your Apple podcasting app and leave us a 5-star review. We love those. All right. We got a lot. I put a lot of notes in there. A lot of newsy stuff. Our buddy. So we got like 1 week left of Champagne Larry.
The truth is we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
He had one last parting gift for us as he's walking out the door. Don't let the door hit you in the ass, Larry. He made some comments about an automatic bid. He said the Pac-12 supports expansion of the college football playoffs and believes that the Autonomy 5, the Power 5, champion should...
So, stop you right there. Why are you doing that, Larry? Why are you calling it the Autonomy 5?
Yeah.
Nobody does that. You don't need to do that. Don't do it.
I don't think I've ever even heard that.
I'm going to be a pedantic idiot. You don't need to do that, Larry. Just call it what everyone else calls it.
But he says that the Power Five should annually qualify for the College Football Playoff. We greatly appreciate the work the College Football Playoff Subcommittee, as well as the thoughtful and productive discussions amongst the management committee this week in Chicago. We now look forward to reviewing the expansion proposal more thoroughly with our members, student athletes, partners, and other key stakeholders. Larry, I don't want you reviewing shit. I want you out the door. This is all George Klyavkov's call here. This is a weird one. I mean, why are you saying this? You make the Pac-12 look weak. He got crushed. I think Dan Wetzel absolutely crushed him. Wilner was kind of agreeing with him, but didn't think he should do it publicly. I like the way they came up with this. You don't give everyone an automatic bid. Essentially, you get one if you're the Power Five. The only way you don't is if you finish behind two Group of Five conference champions. So that it just seems very unlikely. And if you do, you shouldn't be in the playoff anyway.
Yeah. As I said last week or whatever, last couple of weeks when we've been talking about this, that was the one change in the expansion plan that I liked, which is that they didn't make them auto bids for the Power Five for exactly that reason. What if 8-4 Duke makes it out of the ACC 1 year? You don't want Duke in the playoff.
Yeah.
You still want Clemson, right? You still want the 11-1 Clemson or whatever it is that lost to Duke. So this is much better. It prevents that occurrence from happening. So very on brand for Larry to be completely wrong here. to your point, he shouldn't be speaking for the Pac-12 at all at this point.
No.
Yes, he is still technically in charge, but he should be a background, just moving paper, making things working right, and make sure things are flowing correctly for when Klyavkov takes over. He shouldn't be commenting publicly. He should be saying, "Hey, I know. In discussions with the Pac-12, we're considering all of this stuff, and I'm going to leave it to George, who has every bit of confidence from me. to you know, direct us on how we're going to do this. But like setting policy that's in opposition to what appears to be the proposal, stupid.
For it, yeah, it's like you're the outgoing guy. You're not the incoming guy.
Unless he wanted to argue against expansion, and even then, only if that was going to be Kliavkov's position, which we don't even know what his position is, aside from the fact that he agrees with expansion, correct?
Right, yeah. I don't think we know more. They did the Pac-12 athletic, we'll get into that. The athletic directors did meet with him to talk about some changes. Before we get into that, like I think this is the one podcast, it might have been Pete Thamel that was talking about this, and he had a theory that maybe the Pac-12 wanted the automatic bid. And instead of having the new guy like sort of take the bullet, they let, you know, hey, Larry Scott, we paid you $50 million the last, you know, 10 years or whatever. I want you to say this on the way out. You know, this is your parting gift to us. So if they really wanted that said, but they'd rather have the old guy say it, then they could kind of like, oh, we don't really think that, but they do. That was one of his theories. I'm like, I don't know, maybe that's true.
Maybe it is true, but that would require Larry Scott being more of a good soldier than I think my impression of his general sense of his place in the world would indicate.
I would think it's more of there's so many people that are just like, thank God he's gone. It's just, it's sort of like everyone just understands it's a foregone conclusion. Like, this is the best thing for the Pac-12. And maybe it's just some ego thing. They're like, hey, I'm still viable. Still, like, you're not. Like,
yeah,
you got to go, Larry. But we mentioned those the meetings that the athletic directors had, and what they talked about is a lot of strategy for, you know, that would go along with this college football playoff. And I guess a couple of the subjects are things we've talked about before, getting rid of divisions. And that's sort of your Duke Clemson thing. If you just have the top two teams play, you're much less likely to have an 8-4 team, like when you're going to have, you know, if there's a 10-1 team or 10-2 team and an 11-1 team, one of those teams is going to win. So getting rid of divisions is a popular topic. That's, I guess that was discussed in Las Vegas at this AD meeting, and also going from 9 games to 8. All the strategy stuff that I was a proponent of, and I you might not have been the whole time, but I know a lot of our Pacific Northwest people didn't like it. That's what they're talking about now. And I think if you expand it, like, these are all smart moves, but
I'm good on getting rid of the divisions. I know a pod system has been bandied about as a potential option, which, great. That'd be fun too.
Sure.
The Big 12, I mean, it's getting talked about as if that's an ideal. Remember how much the Big 12 was ridiculed for that stupid system when they unveiled it? Top two teams play again, and more than likely, well, they will have played once already because of the round robin.
Yes.
And more than likely, that would be the case here. I mean, most years it would be that they'll be playing a second game, and potentially it'll be back-to-back. So there's – and that's not lost in the division things, because you do have cross-division games, but I don't know. It's worth consideration to maybe think about something outside of that model of doing a championship game even.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just
the money. I think they're not going to get rid of the championship game.
But I think exploring that a little bit more beyond just doing the 1-2. But I guess that's the thing is, and this is the unfortunate reality. It's what we were talking about last week, is that all of these moves are done to just in advancing the Pac-12's position for the playoff.
Yes.
It's no longer about the pride of winning the South, the pride of winning the North, you know, that sort of thing, where these are meaningful accomplishments for certain teams. I mean,
right. Like Colorado,
Colorado having won the South.
Yeah.
Like, these are real things for those teams. And so
when Utah were, you know, won 2 in a row, like hadn't won, you know, division and did.
Yeah. So you'd be removing that, which, you know, look, it's not the end of the world, because the Pac-10 went a long time without divisions. But it is a thing that you're losing, and strictly to advance the position of the league in the playoff.
Yeah.
And it's all about, with this potential expansion of the playoff, everything is going to be done to serve the needs of the playoff. Mm. And so I think that's going to reduce some value. And frankly, 9-8 in conference is going to reduce the enjoyment of regular season games, because what is that fourth non-conference game going to look like?
Yeah.
It's going to be ass. Like, it's going to be an assy game. There's going to be two FCS teams for a lot of these Pac-12 teams, or very low division games.
I think Wilner proposed like an agreement with like the Big 12 or something.
It would have to. So the thing is, but if you're doing this, why bother with that? Why bother with an agreement with the Big 12? Just play the extra conference game. If you're just going to add a Power 5 opponent anyway, right?
I would rather it be out of conference though. Like I'd rather not have the SEC play 8 and the Pac-12 play 9. Like I've said that forever.
But I guess my point is the problem isn't playing conference opponents. The problem is playing Power 5 opponents. So if you just replace it with a Big 12 team, then what are you winning? What are you gaining from it?
Well, I mean, if everyone played a Big 12 team, you could in theory go 12-0, where if you play a conference game, it's 6-6. You know, like everyone's getting, like half the teams are getting a loss. So that's what I've always had an issue with the 9.
But it's Power 5. I mean, it's not like you're going to go 12-0 if you're playing that many games. But okay, well, yeah, in theory
you might go 9-3, you know.
In theory you could. You're not spreading losses around to the league as much. Yeah. I mean,
all those things I like, David, that are like these capitalist views, they're all happening now. Everyone, all you people out there that have been crushing me, all this stuff, that you don't like it, guess what? It's happening.
Expanding access to something, that's not capitalist.
But whatever my views were, like if you want to,
whatever my views were, they were good.
No, like, yeah, but I assume because the way I like, you know, they want to make more money, whatever, like it's a capitalist.
Yeah, you're expanding entitlements. That seems right.
Sure. But whatever it was, however you want to like categorize
I think I knew, and I think everybody who was making the argument knew it was always going to be a losing argument because money is going to push all of this stuff forever.
Money.
But that's why I don't know that necessarily 9-8 is going to happen, because money's going to push everything forever. And you know what makes a lot less money? Playing like Fresno State versus playing Oregon.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see if that part happens. I think the getting rid of divisions could.
Yeah, we'll see. So that's being talked about. I'm sure we'll get some insights to that in late July. Pac-12 Media Day. George Kalyavkov starts July 1st. There's also something else starting July 1st. Maybe we'll skip to this right now. Name, image, and likeness is kicking off then. So 6 states, I believe, but the NCAA basically came out and said, like, we're not going to really enforce it. So, like, if California started doing it, like, they're not, just because you're not a state that, you know, they didn't want the inequities. And I think it was Brady McCullough in the LA Times reported that it could be expedited here because, you know, California started it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not till 2022 or 23. I forget what it is. But the quote he had, it was from Nancy Skinner. She's a senator. The result of all these states joining our bandwagon is that California colleges could be at a disadvantage and our own student athletes wouldn't be able to enjoy the rights we want to give them until years after other states. So Senator Stephen Bradford is a Democrat from Gardena, and I, Senator Nancy Skinner, decided we'd better fix that. So it looks like we might get some, you know, the timeline moved up, which, why not? If there's states doing it right now, you were the first one out there. You don't need to be one of the last ones to implement it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's going to be some obvious advantages for, I think, the California schools due to proximity to major media markets for a bunch of this stuff anyway. But getting on the same timeline is going to be huge. And I think just, frankly, West Coast schools in general, but I think the California schools in particular, not as if the California schools need a ton of help in recruiting and acquiring talent, but this certainly will.
Yeah, especially UCLA. They're just crushing recruiting. Chip Kelly.
Yeah, just, you know what? They're doing a little bit better right now.
Yeah. Well, like it's effort, right? You try to recruit and then
you try a little bit, but frankly, it's Jerry Neuheisel. It's those jeans, those Neuheisel jeans.
You get gloves, you get some, you know, that Neuheisel magic.
That Neuheisel voice. If you ever hear him talk, he's an exact mimic of
really?
His father.
That's funny.
It's freaky.
What's his role? What's his
wide receivers coach.
He's a wide receivers coach. Okay. Oh, because Jimmy Doherty went to Arizona?
Yeah.
Okay. I met Jimmy Doherty. He was a really nice guy. I think we follow each other on Instagram.
No, that's nice.
Yeah, but then I think I never...
He's a J-I-M-M-I-E.
He's one of those Jimmys, yeah.
Yeah, that's an odd Jimmy.
Yeah, he had I think I might have talked about this. Like we met whatever at a bar, and he had like lived like a block away from me at some point. But then we never like got together or whatever. But
I love all your stories are like personal anecdotes about these people, and me is making fun of their names.
Yeah, but he was a super nice guy, great family. So wish him well at Arizona. We got to talk about the rival to his new school.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Talked about this last week. I mean, just like the one of the more bizarre, like, how could you let this happen? And it seems to be getting worse. Pete Thamel's come out with new stuff as far as like the package that Arizona State Compliance got. The photo in it really looked like it was Herm Edwards with a top 100 recruit around the program's weight room during the dead period. I guess it was the same, whatever kind of hat, bucket hat or whatever it is that he would wear. It was from behind though, so you didn't know for sure, but it pretty much was a photo of Herm Edwards like with this. So the head coach was, you know, according to the Thamel's report, the head coach knew what was going on, but Bruce Heldman, our friend, came out today. So Gene Boyd is basically like the number two athletic director at, you know, behind Ray Anderson. He's the GM of football. And what he said, he's the deputy athletics director who oversees Arizona State football, was made aware of potential recruiting violations during the winter. A former athletic department staff member told The Athletic. The staffer did not know whether Boyd investigated the information or kept it to himself. Obviously, if you got like the number two guy in the athletic department knowing that you're committing these recruiting violations and, you know, health, but, you know, morally, like you're, there's issues there as far as like the health of the country. That could be a lack of institutional control for sure. So it's another blow to Arizona State, I would say.
The question at this point, I mean, I know there are still some ASU diehards who are holding out that this is all like, or at least somewhat concocted, especially like the Herm involvement. I think any neutral observer is recognizing that like most of this almost certainly is true. It's unlikely that this is even mostly fabricated. Yeah. Certainly there could be some axe grinding going on, but not in large part. And if that's true, the question is, what is ASU going to do? Not what the NCAA is going to do, because who knows, it could take them a while. It's whether ASU is going to want to take proactive steps at this point to mitigate any potential damage from the NCAA. And given how quickly the information appears to be being acquired by the NCAA because of whoever this whistleblower is or whatever who prepared this dossier.
Multiple whistleblowers, potentially.
Yeah, multiple whistleblowers who are all dissatisfied with potentially Antonio Pierce. It's going to be a question of whether ASU responds the way Arizona did, which is drag your heels and hope that
kicking,
you can
screaming.
Yeah, and hope you can go all the way, or whether they're going to respond proactively, clean out the staff, and throw themselves at the mercy of the NCAA. I think given the optics of this, it's much more likely they do that than Arizona did with Sean Miller. It's not just the violations, it's the politics, and not, I don't mean like the Democrat versus Republican, but like the fact that this is a larger issue that has more impacts beyond football. It's COVID, which impacted everybody, and it's bad for the optics of the university as a whole.
True.
And the university itself is a much bigger enterprise than its athletics. And so they're going to want to alleviate any potential damage there. So I'm still wondering whether Herm's going to be there in August.
Yeah, I guess Wilner threw out a timeline of July 1st, another big date in college football, because after that, like, you can't transfer and like be eligible. So, because, you know, most people are starting their summer workouts. Like, so if they were going to do something, it might not be till after that date, because then you could have a whole bunch of guys like just leaving the program. But if there's inklings that they would, the problem is, I mean, like you said, I we love the Arizona State diehards, and it just seems there's a shitload of smoke. Like, it would be hard to imagine that most of this is not true, if not all of it. I mean, just the people that are reporting on it that you trust, that are like, they're not going to say stuff, you know, knowing that it's not true or have any chance of not being true. I mean, I think they've taken this pretty darn seriously, you know? It seems to be like, all everyone in Arizona State's in lockstep. Like, Ray Anderson is running, like, this is their model. Like, this is what they wanted.
A new leadership.
This is a new leadership model. And I feel like my guess is this is a circle the wagon situation. Like,
without a doubt.
that they're not going to come out and go, you know what, like, who would it be? The president, Michael Kerr? I mean, these are all, everyone's like connected, you know, like these are your boys. And they got rid of the people that weren't on board. And those are the people that have told on you. Everyone else is on board, or were afraid to get fired or whatever. So it just seems like this goes so high. It would have to be like the president, the athletic director, like Herm, like everybody, like, you know what? We did this. This was wrong. We're going to walk away. And I just don't see that happening. I think there's going to be a fight. And really knowing that this could be a really good Arizona State football team, do they want to try to like ride this out and get a good season in and then make changes afterwards? I don't know. But if Herm's going before, you know, Arizona State's that you know, a pick to win the Pac-12 South and, you know, potentially win the Pac-12. But if there's going to be significant change to the coaching staff, I think everything's, you know, it's going to, you know, this is 7-5 all over again. I think they want to avoid that. But are you basically just buying time until the shoe drops? I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think this next month is going to tell the tale if they're trying to ride it out or if they're going to cut bait. I don't know if I don't know ASU's structure at all. I don't know if there's a board of trustees or anything like that that has some sort of role here, or
that they could go, hey, you know.
Or whether, I don't even know what Arizona's system is, whether they have like a regent system like California does. Or the University of California does, but I wonder if there's somebody higher than Crow who could be, or even just donors. I mean, more than likely donors don't care, but it'd be interesting. I'm interested to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Feldman indicated in like one of his podcasts that this could be, you know, there's ties to Southern California with the 7-on-7 circuit. Like, there could be other schools that are involved. I just feel like if there's other schools involved, it's not going to be to the extent. I mean, who knows? Maybe there is more to the extent of here, but like, this seems to go right to the top, right? Like, this seems to be, everyone was on board. This is how we're going to do things. It's just head scratching. Like, there's things you can cheat at with a pretty decent chance you're not going to get caught. Like, this is one of those things. If you wrote it down on paper, like, okay, so we're going to get rid of anyone that's not on board with this. Okay, they're going to be potential witnesses against us. We're going to bring in all these recruits that we're not going to sign 85% of them. Mm-hmm. They could all, you know, and when they want to go to school, the NCAA can say, hey, you can't go to school unless you tell us what happened. There just seems to be a lot of loose ends here. The chances of getting caught, if you like wrote out a business plan for this cheating model, would be like chances at the end, extremely high, you know?
Well, like, that's one thing that's so upsetting about it is how bad they were at cheating here.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to cheat, be good at it. I'm sure the SEC was hosting visits during this whole time, but you don't hear anything about it because they're good at it. Don't be bad at cheating, too.
So crazy. Well, speaking of the NCAA, we all like talking about Supreme Court stuff, right? Like,
love it. One of my favorite
Judge
things.
Judge Kavanaugh, like whatever. Like, the NCAA got absolutely dunked on by the Supreme Court. And listen to any national pundit on this. Oh, I have a quote here from Dennis Dodd. Truth is, there's no minor legal contentions with the NCAA. It exists to be sued these days. It chose to go all the way to the Supreme Court over laptops because it can, because powerful people like to stay in power, no matter the consequences. Monday, the NCAA got slapped down in perhaps its biggest legal defeat. So this was like, people wanted school expenses, like, hey, we can give student athletes a laptop or other, you know, other things like that. And they fought this all the way. And the way it came out of the way they, not only did they lose 9-0, which is like
unheard of these days,
a beatdown, bipartisan, just absolutely crushed. It just seems to open. It was almost like the Supreme Court was basically daring everyone to go, every lawyer in the country, you could sue them because they're doing some screwed up shit.
Even in the opinions, they were welcoming more challenges that were broader in perspective because this was relatively narrow. They were opening it up for more challenges.
Yeah.
They want more challenges because they want to continue to strike this down because, as literally everyone agrees, I wonder if this will change some opinions of various people who are like, you know, more on the conservative side who have said kids don't need to get paid for playing college football.
Yeah.
The fact that one of the more conservative Supreme Courts of our time just rocked this down 9-0. Yeah, these kids need to get paid because they're workers, and compensation should happen beyond what they're getting in scholarships.
Yeah, and I think what the NCAA fought, and I think Dan Wetzel had a good column. I mean, if you listen to any of their podcasts, any of the national pundits, like, everyone's dunking on the NCAA. But it just seemed to be like the consensus I got from it all was the NCAA was so greedy that they weren't going to budge. They were just going to kick the can down the road. They were going to fight this as much as they could have addressed this 20 years ago and been in a place where name, image, didn't like this was a thing. Reasonable benefits around your, you know, it was a thing where you wouldn't be talking about making college athletes employees and stuff. But you fought this for so long, it's like it's going to be way worse than if you sort of like, you know, let the dam, you know, drain a little bit. Like, it's just built up, and it might just bust through and crush everything.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
I'm pumped too. Yeah, we'd all love to see the NCAA go down. If I never have to see another commercial about these people are going pro in something other than sports, like,
yeah,
that'd be great.
That'd be awesome. I'd take that.
Who knows what would the chaos that would ensue, but, you know, I don't know, but it would be pretty awesome.
It's insane to me that the NCAA is in charge of, like, rowing and a, like, whatever NCAA football is, a multi-billion dollar industry. Yeah. That's insane to me.
Hmm.
The NCAA can handle all of the sports that don't make any money. That's fine.
Yeah.
Create all the rules you want and the bylaws and the guidelines, whatever. But the sports that make money should be governed by something else.
Right. The millions and millions of dollars they fought to save millions of dollars from not being, you know, it's freaking bizarre, but whatever.
It's crazy.
I got one more note. I don't know if you have anything else, David. So Washington and Washington State, they're both approved for full capacity. So USC, UCLA, Arizona State, Arizona. I haven't heard about Utah or Colorado.
Everyone will be full capacity.
I think it's going to be full capacity, but yeah. Those are the latest two, I guess. Anything else you wanted to chat about?
Not even a little bit.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and answer your questions.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Ran out and got some beers for us at the break, David.
I really wish you had.
We'll have beers soon enough. We got some questions and another long voicemail from our buddy Perk. You want to start with that?
Let's start with Perk.
Here we go, Perky.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I know on one of the questions last week, I think it was comparing UCLA to Washington. Dave kind of touched on, I think it was Evan's question comparing UCLA and different teams. David mentioned Cal football and how they really didn't perform all that well over their history. It was primarily the Tedford era where they were really good. And I was wondering if Cal is one of those programs that's fair to lump into a program in both football and basketball that should probably perform a lot better than they do. I've kind of always gotten the sense that is the case. I know they're not going to pluck more kids out of Southern California the way USC and UCLA do, but I feel like the recipe that Tedford had of, you know, getting the occasional good recruit or so out of Southern California and then holding down Northern California, they were a really good team, and I feel like Cal should be able to do that on a regular basis. I feel like the same thing for basketball. I think Northern California has a decent base that they can pluck from, and it seems like they just don't. And I don't know if that's a situation of they've just hired bad coaches or Cal really isn't the school that I guess I would regard it as athletic-wise. And then I just had a quick U.S. history question for Dave. In terms of bad wars that the United States shouldn't have been in, Vietnam really seems to steal the thunder, and it seems like the Iraq war isn't really talked about or discussed. And I was wondering why you think that is. Is it primarily just because it was relatively recent and people don't know all the impact of it yet? Or is there something else going on? Anyway, thanks, guys.
Jeez, Perk. Wow.
Okay, so we'll start with Cal as an easier one. I agree with you to an extent. I think Cal, you hear about the lack of institutional investment from UCLA. I think Cal is even a further rung down the ladder from that.
Yes, for sure.
I think there's just a lack of overall commitment to athletics at the university. I think it's still existing in a lot of ways. And so I think you've seen some also-ran hires over the years. They got lucky with Tedford that he turned out to be an absolute stud. But I think you saw with Tedford what a good coach can do at Cal, which is win big. Cal is one of the schools in the league where if you get a good coach in place, the potential is to be a near elite program. And that's what Cal was for, I don't know, a period of 4 years in there probably. They have that potential. It's the Bay Area isn't, it's not Southern California, but there is some strong talent that you can find up there. And it's certainly possible for Cal to build the power again in the future. They need institutional buy-in, and I think that's been lacking in the past. And Cal basketball has had some upswings over the years, but it's the same deal. I think a series of bad hires and then also just that lack of overall commitment to the program.
Yeah, I would agree with you on the Cal stuff. I mean, we've seen with like Wilcox, like they've done some things well, like they've played good defense, but maybe not do the other side of the ball. But they're, you can get the right coach, and even if you don't have buy-in from the rest of the university or the athletic department or just not as much buy-in, you can still make some magic happen. You get the, you get an Aaron Rodgers, you get a Marshawn Lynch, like you're getting guys that can be difference makers, DeSean Jackson, whoever it is. Like, yeah, I mean, those are big time. I mean, to get DeSean Jackson out of Southern California when, Pete Carroll's recruiting down there, like that's, that's big time stuff. Cal can do that again. And you would hope that there's going to be more. I mean, they were fighting over just, should the stadium even exist? like there's some weird stuff that was going on up there. But, hopefully there's going to be, improved buy-in. And you hope Justin Wilcox can keep moving that program forward and be able to do some things. And we'll see. But that, I think it's a program that does have a lot of potential. No idea about basketball because I don't know about that. But
yeah. As for the Vietnam and Iraq war question, I do think it's mostly a factor of time. I think some people look if you went through U.S. history in high school, where'd you end? Vietnam, right? Or thereabouts?
Yeah, probably not much.
You didn't learn anything of like the 80s and Reagan. You didn't learn anything of that stuff because it was too recent to even be in the history books. I think, the Iraq war is not in the history books right now that kids are actually learning about in high school. So to be knowledgeable about it, it's not something that you internalized young. It's something that you have to be like active and aware about. Now, if you are, I don't know if there's universal agreement on it, but I think everyone is kind of on board with the idea that it was it's a bad war. I think everyone generally agrees with that. My opinion on it is it's the greatest crime of the 21st century to this point. Completely illegal war. George Bush should be in jail. Everyone involved in that decision to go to war with Iraq should be in jail. There's a million dead Iraqis because of what we did. So, I think it's a crime certainly on the order of Vietnam. But given how completely unjustified it was, I would say it's worse. Vietnam was bad, but it was an ongoing struggle for about 20 years, and it was all part of the anti-communism nonsense and very bad. Vietnam, there was a much more capable adversary. Iraq, we were an occupying force, basically just devastating a country for many, many years. So
Dave is on the fence about this one.
Long story short, it will be thought of as very bad and potentially the equal of, combined with Afghanistan, which I think we're now officially out of, or nearly, though I've been hearing that for years and years now. Both of these things are just completely unjust, done almost entirely for economic reasons that have nothing to do with the purported reasons for actually going in. Evil.
All right. So, Perk, you got your answer there from...
listen to the Blowback podcast. It's a modern history of the Iraq War.
Okay. Well, do you want to jump in with the ASU relegation question?
Let's do it. All right. This is... Wait, where is it? Who is it?
John and Brea.
Hang on.
Do you want me to pull it up?
No, I got it.
I got it right in front of me.
I got it right here.
Okay.
Hi, Ryan and Dave. I was born and raised a USC fan, and I attended ASU. I'm so happy to find out that ASU is stepping up its cheating in an attempt to finally compete at the highest level in college football. Since the last face mask was grabbed by Frank Cush, ASU has been playing nice, and look where it's gotten them. However, it's embarrassing and frankly reprehensible that Ray, Herm, and the gang chose the COVID pandemic as the time to get started. The motivational energy and stirring living room speeches ring pretty hollow right now. This wasn't about thumbing your nose at a bureaucratic sloth like the NCAA. Rather, the health, safety, and ultimately the lives of players, staff, and their families was at stake. I'm an alum, and I would support showing the entire staff the door and replacing them with some people that know how to cheat in a smart, respectable, and responsible way. 100%, John. A quick note on relegation. I love the idea of the Mountain West and Pac-12 getting together with a relegation model. What a great opportunity for a 10-2 University of Arizona team to win the Mountain West and make the new 12-team playoff as a team 1 year removed from relegation. Lastly, in the spirit of summer offseason fun, can each of you please tell us about the first car you owned? I'm guessing Dave had some sort of hatchback, and Ryan drove a small Nissan or Toyota pickup truck. Thanks, and have a great summer, John and Brea.
Hey, John. Yeah, I love that, you know, cheating a better way than...
Yeah, just, look, we're all, I'm supportive of funneling money to players as much as you want to. Please do. They need it. Just be smarter about it, and don't do it during the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. So that was a great point from an ASU alum. Thanks, John. The relegation, I think with the relegation, it's like you wouldn't be eligible to make the playoff if you're in the lower division, right? I would say just because you win the Mountain West,
it would be a one-to-one relationship, and it wouldn't be dictated by the NCAA. If there was a true relegation system throughout college football, then yeah, you're probably right. But if it's still subject to the terms of the proposed playoff model, then yes, Arizona would be eligible.
Oh, okay. That would be interesting. My first car, I've never owned a truck, John. I'm not sure where that would come from. Not ever been a truck
guy. Because you're a conservative.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
He's basically saying I had a Subaru.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. So my first car in high school was a Chevy Cavalier that I think was worth, all we had was stick shift. So we had to learn, I hated learning to drive a stick shift, but now I love it because I like driving stick shift. But it was like sort of a rusty color. I don't know, maybe like kind of a reddish maroon kind of thing. I don't know. It was not a pretty car. It might have been worth a couple grand or something, but I worked at the grocery store like since I was 15, saved money. I got hit. It was my fault. You know, you're a 17-year-old kid driving, like you're probably at fault most of the time. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, luckily I was not at fault. And the insurance company like gave me, I think, like $2,400. And it was just really like the front quarter. I just kind of, I think I put like tissue paper on it, like toilet paper on it, like a Band-Aid, and kept driving around. But I went to college. And so, they didn't let me have a car. I think I might have been 18, like my senior year. When I go to college, my sister's 2 years younger. She gets they give her it right away when she's 16, and she was a terrible driver, and she wrecked it. And I was like, I was so pissed. I was like, I'm a freshman in college. Like, you wrecked my car? Like, I got in an accident, and I made money off of it, and you, whatever. But that was my friend. It was a Chevy Cavalier.
She's a bad capitalist.
She was bad.
She didn't make money off of the car wreck.
A little Chevy Cavalier hatchback is what I had, stick shift.
My first car, and several, I would say my first three cars were all hand-me-downs. My first car was a 94 Plymouth Voyager, beautiful minivan, gorgeous car. Loved that thing. I think of the cars I have either gotten or owned, the 94 Plymouth Voyager is my favorite.
Really? The first one?
Yeah, because you can fit a lot of people in a minivan. You can fit a lot of your friends in a minivan. and it had like surprising power. It was like a V6.
Oh, okay.
V6 in a minivan? You can go in that thing. I got that thing up to like 110 on the freeway.
Wow. Impressive.
I'm just saying, minivans, they get a bad rap. Good cars. Good car.
Your first car being a minivan, but you could take all your friends wherever you wanted to go.
Exactly. It's a perfect car for high school. Perfect car for high school. Yeah. Because you can take everyone to the beach. You can take everyone to the baseball game. You can do everything.
That's, I mean, I never thought of that way. Like, that's a, you know, you make fun of the family, like the guy that's like holding out. Oh, I got two kids now. I'm getting a minivan. But as a high school kid,
oh, it was great.
You crush it.
I loved it. Then there was the 97 Ford Escort, which was a very tiny car. Hmm. I was driving to my brother's in Simi Valley on Christmas Eve, going down Sepulveda Pass on the 405, and it blew out the back left tire and completely spun around in the middle of the freeway. good car.
Good nice. Car. You mentioned the year. I don't remember the year of my Cavalier, but I mean, I graduated from high school in 1989. It could have been a 70s car. Like, it might, maybe it was 80 or 81, but it could have been a 70s car.
That's beautiful. Yeah. No, I had the 94 Plymouth Voyager, 97 Ford Escort, 2003 Saturn wagon.
Ooh, I liked Saturns, and then they kind of went away.
Yeah.
I never had a Saturn, but I liked them.
And then my 2015 Hyundai Sonata.
I never had a, it was tough being in LA, East Coast kid, and never had a car in college. Until my senior year, I'd got a job at Hughes Aircraft Company like after my junior year over the summer. So I needed a car, and it was like a $1,500 car, but it was a Hyundai Excel, like I think it was a hatchback again, and, you know, stick shift or whatever. Drove the crap out of it. My college roommate had a Honda, like something like a Honda Accord or some crap like that, and was going to borrow my car one day, and he did, but he didn't take my keys. And I'm like, how did you take my car? He had put his Honda key in my Hyundai and it worked. So that was weird. And by the time the end of my senior year, like the car just died. And I remember me and my friends pushing it down, like it wasn't Figueroa, but went some street around USC to a garage. And I got like $300 for my trip to, I was taking a trip to Europe, like a backpacking trip to Europe after graduate. So pushing my senior year car into the garage, I remember that. That was
beautiful.
That was good stuff.
Beautiful story.
Nice. My one of my best friends in college, he had a Jeep, like no doors, no roof, and you didn't even need a key. You could just get into it and like turn whatever the key would be, it just would work. So if you just turn it, it would start. So if you wanted to take his car, you could just get it. He put a club on it, but it didn't lock. So it looked like it had a club on it. But if you just wanted, like, you know, you would close the club, throw it in the back, turn the thing, and it would start. So that's good awesome stuff. I love kid cars, you know?
It's so good.
All right. We got next one is Frank. Money Stream is starting to open. The Supreme Court ruling didn't kick down the door for blue chip football players to earn, I think it means big money.
Bug money sounds so cool.
Maybe there was a thing I missed. There's a bug money. Big money. The ruling cleared only limited new avenues of compensation for college athletes, meaning schools could offer compensation beyond the cost of attending college, such as scholarships for graduate or vocational schools, internships, computer equipment, study abroad programs, and limited cash awards for athletes, potentially nearly $6,000 for now. Who do well in the classroom. That was a big parenthesis there. But the ruling has the NCAA on the run. I think top football and basketball players will choose big market schools where they can cut endorsement deals based on NIL. Frank and Sacramento. Those are two different things. Like NIL is a different thing than, I think the problem the NCAA was saying was, yeah, you could give, like David Woods, you're our star quarterback. You got a 2.0. You have an academic reward. Here's 10 grand. Like, I think there's stuff like that that they were worried about that you could, and you know, here's a laptop. You know, here's a $5,000 laptop you could sell if you want, but this is for your classes. Like, they were just worried that it was going to be abused, which it probably will, but that's very different than NIL, which I think most people agree you should be able to, you know, if David Woods is our star kicker and he wants to put a highlight tape up on YouTube of trick kicks that he does and make money off it, he should be able to do that. Right now, he can't.
I mean, cue the gif of the little girl going, why not both?
Yeah.
they should be allowed to make money from their schools, and they should be allowed to make money off their name, image, and likeness. Yeah. This is obvious stuff. that the Supreme Court obviously agrees with.
It does open up. I mean, this isn't, I wouldn't say it's limited, Frank, but who knows now? I mean, I think, you know, everyone's going to have new iPads with their playbooks on it. Everyone's, I mean, they're going to be able to do a lot of stuff for this.
Yep. Faux show. All right. Now we got Kyle W. This is a 12-team playoff. Dave and Ryan, enjoyed your conversation about the 12-team playoff and the potential impact on the Pac-12. I think I need to side with Dave's take on this one with a preference to just leave things the way they are. To Ryan's comment about Oregon or Iowa State being the, quote, biggest game in Autzen Stadium history, that pretty much answers the question just by saying that out loud. Here's a question in response to that. Why doesn't the Pac-12 just keep the Rose Bowl? There is virtually no game in the 12-game playoff that will be as big as that. We are giving up a lot and not getting very much in return.
It's funny. I was watching Andy Staples' Twitter today. I don't know if you saw, but he's not a proponent of the top four teams not getting a home game. Part of the reason, and his hypothetical was like, USC comes in at number four and Ohio State's number one. They're playing the Rose Bowl. Like, that's the proposal right now. So Ohio State, you know, there's no playoff type of bowl game in Chicago. It's Los Angeles. If you're playing even Oregon, whoever it is, and you got to come out to the West Coast, Ohio State doesn't really get that. And the bowl alignments would still be there. So you would be playing in the Rose Bowl. So there's some disadvantages to that. What is his point about the Autzen Stadium thing? Like, I mean, a playoff game in Autzen Stadium would definitely be one of the biggest games. I mean, it's a playoff game. Like, no, you don't think that would be a huge game? Like, bigger than a regular Washington game? Like, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, a big time Oregon Washington game, or potentially, I mean, I don't know if any of the Pac-12 championship games were in Autzen besides the UCLA one. But I don't know. Like, what would it be? Like a 5 versus 12 Oregon versus Iowa State first round playoff game?
I guess, yeah, maybe. Like, maybe it wouldn't be as big. But, like, when Ohio State was supposed to come this year, I would have said that's probably, you know, if it ends up being a relevant game, if both teams end up being good, that would probably be one of the bigger games in the Oregon's history, right? Home games, I would think. I mean,
yeah, I could see the argument.
Playing for the national championship.
I think his point is, like, if Oregon Iowa State is one of the biggest games in Autzen history, it's just whatever. It's Oregon Iowa State. Who gives a shit?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think it would be a big deal. If Oregon's that good, they probably got a Heisman candidate somewhere. Like, there'd be a lot of factors on the line. You know, winning a playoff game at home, like, I don't know. I still think it'd be a big deal. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I could go either way on it. I'm ambivalent.
Kyle, thanks for the question. I was just in Carlsbad this week, played some golf down there at the La Costa Resort. Got one of those, you buy one of those things where you can, like, for the price of like half a round, you can play all day. So I did that for a day. It was fun. And I was god awful. I was sucked. So.
Was it because you were very drunk?
There was the hangover factor was probably part of it.
Got it.
I keep golfing when I'm like not slept. It's like, I probably shouldn't do that. You know?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
also taking lessons, which so they change things and I'm not like really practicing. I'm just playing more. And I, you know, the guy's like, you got to practice this because you can't just like try it on the course. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. I'm an idiot sometimes. So but you're still out there golfing. It's fun. Thanks for that one, Kyle. This is Sparky's roommate with a couple suggestions. Ryan and Dave, I hope I remember to remind you as we get closer to the season, because of course you'll need reminding, especially you, David, especially you. But for the picks, whoever's in the lead should always pick first. If they don't, then they could basically always just copy the losing player's picks and always stay ahead. We don't do that. That hasn't been a problem. Like,
no.
Has that been an issue? But I get your point. Also, only the nerdiest of Podcasts of Champions nerds are keeping score at home or checking the website if it's on there. So it would be nice if you guys announced the game picking scores every week. I think I do because I'm usually ahead and I like to tell everyone that.
But when you're not, you don't.
Fair. Yes. We'll see if David was paying attention, then he would know the score and he could announce that.
Right, but I'm not going to.
Right. So for 4 years, you got scores and then 1 year you didn't when David won. So 2019, you didn't get much of updates because David was winning.
I don't think we need to talk about the distant past.
Like 2020 when I won. Okay. So here's a weekly conversation with myself as I'm listening in the car. This is what Sparky's roommate's saying. Me. Wait, who's ahead? Me. I don't know. What did they pick last week? Me. Ugh. I don't feel like listening to last week's episode again. Me. Check the website. Me. LOL. No. Do they even post a score on the website? Me. Well, regardless, I don't know what the score last week was. Me. Oh, Ryan just said he was winning. Me. Did he say by how much? Me. No. Me. Oh, well, then David is probably getting every pick right. Me. David's not correcting him, though. Me. Psh. I doubt he remembers what he picked last week either. And is David really the type to bother putting in the work to keep score himself? Me. Good point. Okay, thanks. Sparky's roommate.
Fair.
Good. Did I read that poorly? I don't know.
That's like I think you nailed it.
It's like, you say me every sentence. Is yeah. Not wasn't easy, I'm going to say.
No, it wasn't easy. You handled it well. And I think the points were fair.
Jason. You would think it would be easier than that, but it was not.
All right. This is from Brad in Portland. Future of divisions in the pack. Hey, guys. Last week, you talked about the new playoff format that conferences would make changes to get teams into the playoffs. I think the pack is a great opportunity to realign on how they do things. Instead of being in two divisions, they could go to four-team pods. Each team would play the other team in the pod and then have two teams they play from the other two pods. The California schools would be in one pod, Oregon and Washington schools in another, and the Arizona schools plus Utah and Colorado would be in the last pod. That pod idea would schedule 7 conference games. For the 8th game, you would either have an additional crossover pod game set up before the season, or you could do something like last season where the top teams play each other, 1 versus 2, 3 versus 4, and so on. What do you think? Thanks for the time, Brad in Portland. Hey, what one thing I would like about this is you pick, rather than doing 1 versus 2, if you went to pods, do the top 2 pod winners. So whatever the top 2 pod winners are, because more than likely they're going to be 2 pretty good teams because you're eliminating one of these pods.
Okay.
So instead of having to be division winners, which, you know, you could end up with a 8-4-ish type team, make it the pod winners. Because the odds of having 2 of the really good teams in one pod are, you know, slimmer.
So you're saying for the championship game,
yeah,
take the top 2 pod winners.
Yeah, the top 2 pod winners.
Okay, so that would like lessen the likelihood of a 8-4
of a truly also ran. Now there's still a chance, obviously, but right, lessen the likelihood.
Like if Alabama and Georgia are in the same pod, like okay, they might be the 2 best teams,
right? You know, but you would do your best to, I think, split them up by strength.
And Brad was saying, for the 8th game, so I wouldn't recommend that for the 8th game if you're going to do a championship game because you're trying to, like, you're putting 1 versus 2 already. Like, save that for
Just do an additional regular crossover for the 7th game.
There could be a longstanding rival, but, I mean, I guess that rotates, so. Right. I like the pod idea. I mean, I'm cool with that.
I'm pro pods.
Pro pods. Not eating the Tide Pods like Gronk says, right?
No.
We don't want to do that.
We don't eat the Tide Pods.
I don't usually buy like Tide Pods. I had a friend stay with me and he brought some Tide Pods, so I started throwing them in my laundry. I usually just use like the liquid stuff. Just touching them, I can't imagine someone wanting to put that in their mouth. Like,
no.
That was a real thing. Like, it wasn't like just an internet thing. Like, that actually happened. People put Tide Pods in their mouth.
Was it? I don't know.
I think they did. Maybe they're just goofing on me, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really get into it because it was just people goofing on millennials like 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't really bother with it.
You're a millennial, right? Or are you not?
I am.
Okay.
But that's the thing also. It's like, even then, millennials were like 30 years old. Like,
yeah.
No. All the stuff that people think, oh, that's millennials. No, it's those crazy little Zoomers.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones who are nuts.
The ones who are like 22, like no, they're not millennials.
We are the
right?
ones who can't afford to buy houses when we're 40.
Right.
The Zoomers are the ones who are crazy. Like they've got brain problems. Millennials are just depressed. They've got a different set of brain problems.
Right. The Zoomers, is that what they're called? The Zoomers?
Gen Z or
Yeah. They've never faced adversity in their life, right? Like they've never had
to
work.
No, they've faced a ton, but they've responded to it by getting really, really idiosyncratic and weird.
Okay.
No, they're going to be in the same boat as the millennials, but they're just like too weird to even notice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we're insulting so many of our listeners out there.
No, it's great. No, I mean, you want me to get into Gen X? You want me to get into Gen X and the boomers? Because I can. Oh, I'll go hard.
Yeah, we probably don't need that. I'm a Gen X, I think.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are like, you're boomer. I'm like, I think I'm like 6 or 7 years from boomer, but you know.
Yeah, no, you're Gen X.
Yeah. All right. Well, you also solicited Twitter questions.
I did. I did. We got a lot.
Oh crap. Okay. So let's.
All right. So we got one from Utah Punt Team. I specifically asked for no football questions, and yet this first one is a football question. Does a school's proximity to recruiting hotbeds matter less now with giant recruiting budgets and technology? Can this lead to an Oregon non-LA powerhouse where that might have been harder in the past?
I mean, I think proximity is still, you know, location, location, location is going to be a thing. Like you could have, you know, I can do a virtual tour, you know, on Redfin or whatever of some house, but like it's still, the location of it's still going to matter. I think if you're, you know, there's going to be kids that just don't want to go that far from home, no matter how much technology is there. I think that's still going to be a thing. Maybe not as strong as before, but the home factor is going to be a thing no matter where it is. If you, you know, it's just, it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to be a factor. If you're asking if it's going to matter a little bit less, I agree. I do think it will. And I think, but I think for a school to recruit nationally in the way Oregon is successfully doing now, you still need to have an established brand. Oregon spent a lot of time establishing a very unique brand beginning in the mid-2000s and continuing to now. With, you know, obviously Nike has played a huge role in that, but Chip Kelly being wildly successful on the field from 2009 to 2013 was also a huge part of it. And I think that combination has made it so it's an attractive destination. And on top of that, they, you know, invest a ton of money in it too, and they've got good recruiters. But you can't underestimate the fact that Oregon has become a brand in a way that it wasn't before like 2005. And that's a huge factor in it. I don't think if you just gave, if you gave Arizona a ton of money that suddenly they would be recruiting nationally in any meaningful way. You need to have something to show for it. Oregon has had something to show for it, and they did it in a way that like that recruits responded to as like, oh, that's really cool. This is really swaggy. And I think that's the bigger factor than the amount of money they're spending on recruiting.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that one. What's our next tweet?
I've got one from Hithliday.
Oh, I remember him.
Do you buy the, quote, Antonio Pierce was running a sleeper cell of bullies and cheats theory that might spare Herm Edwards? And have you ever seen such a separate subculture form within a coaching staff before?
I mean, this is the leadership model, right? Like, he's a CEO, so they're going to have your generals out there,
I don't buy it for a second.
Yeah.
Not a bit. I mean, I think maybe to an extent, not the exact details of everything, single thing going on, but no. I mean, I've never seen a program run where the head coach is completely oblivious of the major things. I mean, literally visits are being hosted during a dead period and you don't know about it as the head coach? No. Sorry. That's not happening. That's false.
No. I think the photo that's there, I mean, most, I would guess it's Herm Edwards. I haven't seen the photo. Yeah, I think he knew what was going on. Like Antonio Pierce could have been the mastermind or this was his plan or whatever, but my guess would be Herm Edwards was on board.
Yep. Then we got one from Danny V23. Why post a birthday message for your coach if you're going to turn off the comments in it?
So this was a USC football Twitter account posted like a happy birthday to Coach Clay Helton, but wouldn't allow anyone to comment on it.
Did it start out as a no comments post?
I believe, yeah, because there weren't any. So you could only comment if you like were followed by the USC football account. So basically, if you're one of their friends, you could comment on it.
That's stupid.
It just seems like it's like either don't tweet it or allow the comments. Because you know everything they post about Clay Helton, like if I retweet something that Clay Helton says, like, hey, congratulations to Talanoa Funga for getting drafted, blah, blah, blah. Like all the comments are, a lot of the comments are, you should be fired, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's the reality of it.
Frankly, you prefer replies to quote tweets. A quote tweet dunk is way worse and way more damning than a reply. Nobody sees your replies, but quote tweets get quoted to all of their followers. You don't want that. But and it's so easy to see the quote tweets now in Twitter's system. You can just click the quote tweets thing. So it's the same deal.
Oh, so if you click on quote tweets,
it'll show you all the quote tweets, like all the people just dunking on
like,
Clay.
Yeah, so the guy that like retweets it but like puts his comments on it, like Clay, get out, or whatever, like something like that.
Like the only way I ever retweet anything, right?
You check those, but if it was a some troll or whatever, some guy that has 80 followers, if you quote tweet a big time account, like there's a lot more potential for them to see your quote.
Yeah,
tweet,
I mean,
right?
It's both. They can see anything you reply to too. But the thing is, when it's an 80 follower account replying to something. Not even their followers are seeing that unless they follow both accounts. When you quote tweet it, you're quoting it to all 80 of your followers.
Yeah.
So it's I mean, from a magnitude of impact, it's probably more so if you're closing replies, if you're like trying to manage like the PR of it. And when you get down to that, don't post a happy birthday message birthday message for any dude over the age of like 40. Nobody cares. Second, don't do it for your embattled head coach.
Yeah. It was, I mean, we'll see what happens in the Coliseum this year, but it got to the point in 2019, like they couldn't interview Clay Helton when he would be walking out of the stadium because people would boo. They couldn't put like a picture of him up on the, like they had to avoid the head coach because fans would react very negatively, and that's obviously a problem that you have. But if that's the thing, don't post a happy birthday message to your head coach.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
All right. We've got one from Python Idler. Dave, I'm on the East Coast. How do you watch Pac-12 football, assuming it's on at a godly hour? A bunch of people have missed this memo, which we've discussed on the podcast, and I've posted on the UCLA message board, but it still seems like that information is like trickling out to people.
You're in Atlanta, right?
I live in California now, and I have since April of last year.
Yeah.
So I'm back. Not going back there.
No.
I'm here for good. This is from Bert_Barras. What do you think about Champagne Larry saying that there should be an auto bid for the Power 5 conferences? Do you believe the Pac-12 is scared of getting left out of a 12-team playoff? We discussed that already on the show.
Do you think the Pac-12 was scared of being left out? Because it just seems
they would
dumb.
Have been left out if this system had been in place last year.
Right. In a pandemic year, we only played 6 games.
Right.
But
no, I mean, if you look back at the previous years up to 2014, the reality is the Pac-12 actually would have gotten in multiple teams several of those years. So I think the danger of them getting left out in a 12-team model is pretty slim.
Right. This just seems like a stupid hill to defend.
Very stupid.
Yeah.
Then we've got Mike and Joaquin 4. Is it beneficial for the Pac-12 to have the college football late game start no later than 6 p.m. Pacific time to possibly get more exposure on the East Coast?
No. I think you need the Pac-12 After Dark's a thing. People don't like it.
You need that window. And frankly, you got to make this work for the people on the West Coast who actually want to watch. I mean, you can spend all day trying to attract a different market, trying to attack a market in China or trying to attack a market on the East Coast. The reality is whatever you can do to appeal to your bread and butter is going to be the most cost effective, dollars and cents, efficiencies, yada, yada, yada. So, you're going to need to find windows that are late at night that work for your fan base and that work for your teams so that they're not all playing concurrently. You gotta keep up the late games. All right, Zach Stewart. Oh, finally, we're out of football. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
You ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're ready for this one. Are you ready?
Probably not ready.
Bitcoin. Let's hear the thoughts.
Oh God, I have no, like someone asked me about this.
I was expecting like a Bitcoin maximalist right here.
No, I really don't like.
What kind of libertarian are you?
I'm not opposed to it. I just don't know much about it. And like, you know,
decentralized. Come on, baby.
Like, it's definitely like, I mean, I own an electric car and it's not because of like, I just like it. You know, it's not because like I'm making some.
This is how you guys
statement.
Get the gold standard back without actually having to get it.
If I felt like I was going to make a ton of money with Bitcoin, I would do it. It wouldn't be some, you know, philosophical reason.
The only reason to use Bitcoin, I think, is as a get-rich-quick scheme. My opinion on it is it's nonsense, the whole thing.
It seems just like nonsense.
Top to bottom, it feels like a Ponzi scheme to me. But you can make that argument about any currency. The thing is, it's a new currency. How many new currencies are going to last? I don't buy it. I don't buy it as a store of value. I don't buy it as a currency.
I haven't dug into it to know enough about, but it's like maybe analogous to like, hey, you're Catholic. Like, there's probably a lot of things wrong with, I'm Catholic. Like, there's a lot of things wrong with the Catholic churches, but it's been around a long time. You kind of know it, where you're like, oh, there's someone created a new religion. If it's the, you know, the David Koresh, whatever, like the Branch Davidians, like, I don't really trust the religion that started like last year, you know, maybe it's the right religion. Maybe it's right, but I don't trust that it's not been around for thousands of years.
Well, and that's why the people who are real aficionados sound like cult leaders of Bitcoin. Like the ones who are really, really into it, they sound insane. Like they just sound crazy because it's very new. And like, look, they might very well be proven right. I am far from a fiscal or monetary like expert by any means. It reeks of something that like most people don't actually understand, but think they understand or want to understand. And so they want to purport to understand what it is. Yeah. And then got the amount of things were like, we're going to use blockchain like 5 or 6 years ago. And like, then you would hear these people explain what blockchain was. And it was very clear they did not even understand what the hell they were talking about. I just feel like the whole thing is kind of like that.
And someone mentioned like, well, there's the environmental concerns. I'm like, it's like digital currency. I don't get it. But
it's the amount of like energy you have to use to mine the shit.
Yeah. Which, I mean,
look, I don't understand any of that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, wait, you're like literally using like mainframe computers to mine this stuff, which is actually just like debugging code or some shit. This doesn't make any goddamn sense. Why are we doing this just to make fake money? We're going to burn down the earth to make fake money? Like, isn't that perfect, though? Isn't that beautiful?
I'm like, it's sort of this thing, like, I tried coffee once in college, and I've avoided it ever. Like, this is something that comes up all the time. Like, everyone I know drinks coffee, and I just never drink coffee.
I feel like this is an elaborate...
Everyone talks about Bitcoin, and I avoid it.
I feel like it's an elaborate practical joke by, like, some time-traveling person from the 1890s who was really married to the gold standard, and he's like, oh, you guys want to see fake money? This is some real fake money. See how you bitches do with this? Because, like, you know, the argument from the Bitcoin people is that, well, fiat money is also fake money. You know, it's not tied to any standard. It's just the government-backed currency. And there's important words there. Government-backed currency.
Right.
Because the money will say what it is based off what the government's power is. They can dictate what it's worth.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's international considerations there, but they dictate what it's worth. And then you have controls like inflation.
All right. We should move on.
I could talk half knowing about Bitcoin for a long time.
You want to do a couple more and then, or do we not?
We got more. We got a lot more.
We got to get out of here.
JT_01. If each Pac-12 program was a film franchise, which one would they be?
Jesus Christ. We can't do that right now.
You don't think so? You don't think you have that in you?
There's beers waiting for us. Like,
that's true.
There's
that's
fresh.
True. Sorry. Cut. That one's gonna have to wait. I'm gonna favorite it. Which means my likelihood of coming back to it is like minimal.
I never hang out with you. We have a window to hang out in. My friend has fresh bluefin tuna he caught.
All right. Here's a good one. Top three most attractive Pac-12 coaches.
Oh, okay. Justin Wilcox.
Good looking guy. Yeah. Okay. So we're ruling out. Just rule out some of them. Clay Helton, Chip Kelly. No, sorry.
No.
Not into it. I'm going to hold Kyle Whittingham.
I mean, there's a
rugged mountain man right to him.
It would be an acquired taste, but there would be
Carl Durrell.
David Shaw, like.
Carl Durrell and David Shaw are both handsome men, but I think I'm going to go Carl Durrell. He's in better shape.
Okay. So Justin.
Justin. Carl. All right, then we got.
We're going to first name him.
We got Cristobal. No.
He's an offensive lineman. He can't be like,
I don't know. It's a mountain of a man.
Yeah, that's the problem, you know.
You're not into it?
No, I think he just posted like a
he'd be the big spoon with you.
He posted like a anniversary like for his wife. Like he definitely looked younger in the picture and stuff with him and his beautiful wife, but
no Jonathan Smith. He's just like standard average.
Yeah. He was in chess club or something. Like he's not that
Jimmy know. Lake, nah.
Probably not. I'd go Shaw over Lake.
Rolovich, no. Herm? Herm in his younger days, maybe.
Herm's a good looking guy. Yeah. I like where we're like leaning African American throughout this.
And I'd go no Jed Fish.
He's younger though, right? I don't.
He's younger. I mean, if it's just youth, you're after.
No.
All right, so we're going Wilcox, Shaw, and Durrell.
Okay, I like it.
I love it.
Okay.
Okay, I don't really understand that one. This is from G. Ross. Is pee stored in the balls?
No, it's in your bladder.
Yeah, well said.
Okay, I don't know what to say.
I don't
know what the joke would be.
This is from Joaquin Fernandez. Which Pac-12 coach would you feel comfortable leading your group in a zombie apocalypse? Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah, 100% Kyle Whittingham. Yeah, yeah.
You know he's prepared for it.
Yeah, first of all, like if you were just like showed up and he'd be like, oh, what's the zombie? Oh, yeah, okay, let's go to this shed. Like if it was like something else, it would be a different shed.
All right, so we're going to rapid fire these to get through them, okay? Because okay. There's a lot more, but I want to get them done.
Okay.
All right, Katy Perry or Taylor Swift?
Katy Perry.
Taylor Swift.
All right.
Better songwriter.
I was just saying, okay. There's different reasons I picked Katy.
Yeah, you know, you are you're an objectifier. I like to appreciate the artistry.
She is a very good songwriter, like she, and super attractive. I like Tall. I like, you know, but like, there's something about Katy Perry. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I think she's a little less crazy.
Uh-huh. Thoughts on the doodle dog breed?
Friends have them. My former writer Dan Wyke has one of the, some doodle, like, I like.
Is he one of the ones you fired or not one of the ones you fired?
I joke that I fired him, but he left for the LA Times.
Okay.
He's the Laker beat writer now for the LA Times.
That's nice.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't have any thoughts on the doodle. How long was the first hug since COVID between you two? We didn't hug, we shook hands.
Yeah, we can hug though. We can, after a couple of beers.
Well, we'll hug for a long time.
We shared a lot of stories during this COVID.
Yes, we did. Do you like, this is from Six More W's. Do you like sleeping on trampolines?
Never slept on a trampoline.
I have.
You have?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Did you like it?
No, I can't say that I did.
Okay. It's like a waterbed kind of thing or not?
No. Doesn't feel like that at all. And if you're sleeping on it with multiple people, you kind of, depending on the weight of the different people, you slope.
Oh, I'm sure.
A little bit. It's not great.
Was this a thing? Like, is that like a... Like...
No, I don't know that it's a thing, but I did it once.
It's very random, and that you have done it. Like, it seems like there was a reason why this was asked.
It was it was like an overnight, like, hangout in high school.
Oh.
And we were just goofing off.
I love hammocks. I don't know if I could sleep on a hammock, like, full night sleep, but
you
I
can
could
nap.
Try.
You can drift in and out of a nap in a hammock. Okay. All right. Mr. TPSM, if each Pac-12 program was a resort in Las Vegas, which would they be? They're all the same. All the resorts in Vegas are the same. You can't convince me otherwise.
Yeah, I was like, with the Bellagio and the Wynn, they're
that
so
said,
different.
Arizona is Treasure Island.
Okay. I like it. Okay.
Oregon State is Tropicana.
Fair. Washington State is the Excalibur with the pirate.
Yeah.
Maybe that's pirate, but no, actually, that should be Treasure Island. But,
what's one that's like a little bit run down but still has potential because it's mid-strip? Like Harrah's?
Mirage?
Mirage. That's UCLA.
Okay.
USC would be probably the Venetian because it's been surpassed by like the Palazzo, but it's still kind of upscale. It still has potential. You'd still have to pay a lot of money to go there. Right?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Oregon's the Palazzo or the Wynn?
It could be, yeah, maybe Wynn or Mandalay Bay, maybe.
Stanford feels like Mandalay Bay. It's sort of off to the side. It's doing its own thing with a huge pool.
Okay.
That's enough. We don't need to do it.
Okay.
All right. Then we've got, Death Row Huff. This is a good one to close out. Actually, we've got a few more after this. give me thoughts on Israel and Palestine.
Do you ever watch Rick and Morty?
No.
It's hilarious. And they're season 4 just came out, but they're like saving the world all the time, and the president calls them. They have a Barack Obama kind of president, but he's like big black guy, like, and just egomaniac, and they always call him to like save the world and stuff. And then they get in fights, and like they're Rick and the president are fighting in the White House. It's all this stuff. It really pisses him off. One time, he's like, "President, your approval rating is 100%." He's like, "Why?" He's like, Israel and Palestine signed a treatment like it's really simple if you just thought about it. It's like something like that. Like the really simple if you just think about it a minute, peace treaty. And so he solved, like Rick goes over there and is like smoking like an alien hookah pipe and solves like the Middle East crisis and pisses off the president. He's like, Why do they do that? Because they're assholes. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I'm not doing it justice, but it was pretty funny.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
But yeah, so that would be my thoughts. There's probably some agreement you could sign.
Watch Rick and Morty.
Yeah. If you just think about it, this agreement would probably make sense and we could get it done. But
things are very bad. I would invite everyone to think about how they would react if they and their family and 2 million of their closest friends were kept in an open air prison for years. Mm. This is from Gabe RN or Gabe M 602. Have you ever reenacted the Revolutionary War? No.
No.
Do you hate the color maroon?
No. My first car, I think, was maroon. Yeah. Like I said.
What about Buffalo Blood maroon?
I don't hate it because I really don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. On a scale of 1 to 10, how simp are you? Do you know what simp
is? I don't know what simp is.
So I'm going to look up simp in the adjectival form. So a simp is somebody who is very overly desperate for women or overly accommodating. This is somebody simping for somebody. It's an internet thing.
Okay.
So how simp are you? I would say put it on a 1 to 10 scale, with 10 being extremely simp.
Can I give an example of being extremely simp?
Constantly posting in the replies of somebody that you have never met who's a female on Twitter.
Like some hot chick on...
That's simping.
Okay. Yeah, I don't... I like the ladies, but I would say like...
I'd call myself a 3 or a 4.
Yeah,
on
I would
a simp
be on,
scale.
The, on the lower end of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Certainly, everyone's a simp at some level.
There's people that have like extreme confidence and they'll go up to anyone and just.
But that's not
to them.
Simping.
Okay,
that's different. That is, that's just maybe being a normal person. Simping is doing it like in this kind of weird, awkward way.
Okay. Yeah, I'm awkward enough. I don't need to like add to my awkwardness. Yeah.
If you marry a Mormon, does that mean you are Mormon?
I think to get married in the Mormon church, I don't even know if you can, like if you weren't, but I think you'd have to be to get married in the Mormon church, I believe. Maybe you'd be some kind of Jack Mormon. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you have to actually get approved or whatever. I don't think it's a thing where you can just marry into it.
Yeah, I think to get into like the Mormon temple, like to get married, I think you have to be like go through this stuff.
Yeah, you got to wear the underwear.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Yeah, it is part of it.
Like I have friends that were like grew up in the Mormon church, but then they don't really follow it, so they call themselves like Jack Mormon. But I don't think if you were marry a Mormon, you could like if you were a Jack Mormon, you could probably marry a Mormon. You're a Mormon, but you weren't. But if you weren't a Mormon, I think you'd have to become one. I don't know. Our Mormon friends and listeners, maybe you can help us with that.
I will say this. Can I say this?
Sure.
I've never met a Mormon I didn't like.
I think I would say the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
I met a lot of super nice people.
Yeah. Incredible.
In Utah.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Great.
Where I met them, but yeah.
I mean, probably not the ones, doing the like fundamentalist polygamous thing out in the like countryside.
I haven't met them.
No, I haven't met them because they're off doing their thing.
Yeah.
The other ones are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great peeps.
We love them.
Is that it?
That's all I got.
All right.
That's all I got. So, yeah, I think there's enough there that we've probably drawn some hate mail. So that's good.
Well, if you want to talk about peace in the Middle East or
I complimented and then backhanded the Mormons. I'm sure I'll get some hate about the Israel-Palestine thing. Then we've got the Iraq War. I mean, if there are any still holdouts who liked that thing.
You're pretty good at upsetting people, I think.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say I'm good at upsetting people. I would say I'm good at expressing my beliefs, which in some ways people disagree with vehemently.
Which is upsetting people, yes.
Yeah, some of them get upset.
Mm, yeah.
But am I upsetting them or are their beliefs upsetting them?
You know what's upsetting me? I don't have a beer in my hand. So let's get the hell out of here.
Okay.
All right. That is David Woods in freaking person right next to me. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.
Wow, that was loud.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.